When clients see all their problems as other people needing to change, it can fill their lives with so much pain and aggravation. But as Dr. Marsha Linehan points out, before a client can effectively release their blame, they need to make a very important distinction.
Sometimes it's true that other people need to change. You're in a job somewhere and you're being mistreated, for example. Okay? So in those situations, so the job of the therapist is to try to determine whether your belief that the other people are engaging in behaviors really are problematic for you versus you're thinking anything that goes wrong is the other person. And I've had both clients. I have clients who think all problems to the other person, and I've had clients who think the problem is the other person when it actually is the other person.
Discrimination. Sometimes the problem is the other person, and sometimes the problem is you. But if you are global in your thinking and you reflexively blame other people such that it never occurs to you to ask the question, is there something I'm doing that's contributing to this? And that's obviously a gaping hole in your awareness.
That's Dr. Michael Yapko. Both he and Marsha see this inability to differentiate as a core reason why people get overwhelmed by blame.
And so to start to talk to people about the fact that anytime you're in a relationship with another person, you're 50% of that relationship. And to think that somebody else is 100% responsible for something they're only 50% part of is convenient, and it's a convenient distortion, but it isn't really going to help you any if you blame the other person completely at times when they're really not to blame.
We have a skill called wise mind. Wise mind is that all people are capable of wisdom. And so we tell clients all the time, so ask wise mind, is this really the case or not the case? And when you ask wise mind, you can't answer for it. You have to listen for the answer. You'd be amazed at how many people come up with the correct answers when you don't let them decide what the answer is. If you decide, you probably, who knows what you would say. So it's important to evaluate where really is the problem. Is the problem the other person, or is the problem that you can't tolerate something they're doing that you don't like, which is very different than them being the problem?
That last point can be an important qualifier when we're trying to help a client work through the issue. Sometimes the client can simply be angered by another person's behavior or actions, and this can lead to a sort of misapplied blame. And this is a good place to address another vital distinction that may need to be made. Once we get all the facts of what the other person did to deserve the blame, we may need to establish some sort of standard by which to evaluate them.
Sometimes I'll find that clients are way overestimating the horribleness of what that other person did, in my opinion, and I have to be careful about that. And it helps to sort of create standards outside the client and me, because sometimes the client really has a head of steam about how horrible that other person was. And if I move into, well, on the 0 to 10 horrible scale, I think it was more like a 2 than thermonuclear warfare, you know, kind of a 10, but that is not always so appropriate to say. It doesn't always go over well, especially if the person's heated there. So you bring in other standards.
That can be a key point to keep in mind. We want to be careful when it comes to minimizing the other person's behavior. Not every client overestimates the other person's fault. There's a flip side as well.
In fact, in my experience, more often than not, the client is actually underestimating, really, the inappropriateness, the sustained mistreatment they're dealing with, or the impact on other people. So we can err either way, overestimating or underestimating, but often people are really served by the therapist helping them appreciate, no, this is actually really a big deal. And you've got more rights here, actually. And it's reasonable for you to claim them for yourself. So maybe I'll just finish there and just say that I find this territory of exploring third parties a critically important aspect of therapy, and also one we got to be very skillful and careful with.
Okay, so there's a situation where the client may be justified in their blaming, and we need to help them apply a reasonable standard to the offense. But to get back to Michael's point, some clients simply aren't able to properly assess their own role in these matters. When this happens, a client can often default to blaming others. They can get very committed to this viewpoint, and it becomes impossible for them to take any agency in the blame because they see the problem as a zero-sum game.
So this, too, requires a discrimination. How do you know what you're responsible for and what you're not responsible for? And the reason that's such an important question and it's such an important discrimination to make is how often self-blame or blaming others is at the heart of the problem. So, for example, with depression, if you look at the criteria for diagnostics for depression, one of the criteria is if you have excessive or inappropriate guilt. Well, guilt presupposes responsibility. And to define guilt as excessive or inappropriate is a very clear statement that you can be distorted about where the responsibility is.
Responsibility. Michael has touched on an important piece of the work involved in the way we approach blame. And in Module 3, we're going to take a deeper look at the role that responsibility plays in a person's blaming stance. But back to the main point. When a client is struggling with self-blame or with a blaming of others, we may want to focus on two key patterns.
One, the person isn't aware of where the responsibility actually is, and I need to help them learn how to make that discrimination. And secondly, the blame comes, the anger comes, when they have inappropriate expectations but don't realize it. You know, if you ask the premier relationship experts, John and Julie Gottman, what single factor most predicts satisfaction with relationships, they will tell you it's entirely dependent on your expectations. That when your partner is doing the things you think they should do, you're happy with them. And when they're not doing what you think they should do, then you're not happy with them. But it misses the question of, are your expectations realistic in the first place?
I had a client once who almost always believed that a person should invite her to their birthday party when they were like, how many, you know, like it would, they were way out of town. Okay. And I would say, now, how is it that you would expect that person to invite you when you live here and they live all the way across the universe practically? You know, how is it that you came up with the idea that they should have done it? So that's different. That's when the person puts a should on the other person. You know, they should do what I want. And so I mainly tell the average client that nobody should do what you want. It's just that what you want. And if you want it, we have to figure out a way to get it. And saying you should do it usually doesn't help. You know, seeing a person and saying you should have invited me to your birthday party, I guarantee you, is not going to help your life. So that's sort of the you should phenomena. You should do this, you should have done this, et cetera, et cetera. And so you must, I guess I'm going to always tell them, you know, the word should is probably not a helpful word in your life.
I imagine you've come across the you should factor in your work with clients. Dr. Kelly McGonigal has seen this in her training work as well. But Kelly has found a unique way to turn these shoulds into something less blameful and a little more useful.
This is going to sound kind of cheesy, but you change a should into a could to change your perspective on this. So when the shoulds start coming out, somebody else should have done this or should do this, say, well, what could you do? And really start to think about what your options are. And in many ways, you could choose to change your perspective on it. And would that get you what you want? You could choose to confront this person about it. Would that get you closer to what you want? You could choose to take action on your own rather than wait for someone else to do it. Is that a better choice? And to think about what all the coulds are in your situations that you feel really empowered to make a choice that gets you closer to what you want or that maybe would change the relationship. And I think that what's great about that is there's always more options than when your focus is stuck on what somebody else should do and your inability to make them capitulate or make them mind readers so that they do it.
As Kelly said, that could be a better way to approach the issue of blame. So let's just quickly review what we've heard so far. To effectively work with clients who blame others, we may want to, one, determine whether there's actual mistreatment of the client by the person that they're blaming. Two, determine whether the blame is based on an actual problem or if it's more of an intolerance of the other person's behavior or actions. Three, help establish an appropriate standard for evaluating the other person's behavior. Four, help the client discriminate where the responsibility lies for the problem. Five, help the client discriminate whether their expectations are realistic or not. And six, when a client is stuck in a should pattern, help them shift from what should the other person do to what could I do. Now, as we've heard, blamers can often struggle with this whole idea of needing other people to change. So it might be worth asking the question, can we really make other people change? This question could be a healthy part of an overall conversation that you have with your client. And it could lead to some helpful ways to maybe start to bring about change in the client's behavior with blame.
I really like the work of Michelle Wiener-Davis. She's got this Divorce Busters program. And I was once in a seminar with her where she invited us to think of exactly the behaviors that we know will bring out the worst in other people. And you can do this. It's different for each other person. If you, if it's a family member, what can you say or do that's going to bring out the worst in that family member? If it's a romantic partner or a business partner, what's the thing that I can do that can bring out the worst in them? And she pointed out that if we have the power to bring out the worst in another person, perhaps we have the power to bring out the best in the other person as well, and to begin reflecting on what might we do to try to bring out what we'd like to see in the other person. And this, I think, is a very elegant way to work with the challenge of somebody who's always blaming others. Because you say, okay, they're doing this horrible thing. How might you get them to do this?
That's an interesting way to approach this idea of changing others. But now let's go at this from a different angle. How do we work with this blaming of other people when the client often feels that the other person will never change, that they're just not going to budge?
If a person comes to the conclusion that there's no way at all that I can influence this other person and they're going to continue to be the same, then we can move into another realm, which is, so how might you work with your own automatic reactions? And to begin to help people to see that their own reactions come out of their personal history, they come out of our shared evolutionary biology, they come out of our wiring as mammals. And if we can help people to see their reactivity as what's causing their grief, as opposed to just the other person's behavior, well, then we've got some wiggle room there.
Putting a little bit of focus on the client's reactivity could be a helpful way to start to improve that situation. As we talked about in Module 1, some of the roots of blame are hardwired into us.
But also look for ways to modulate that hardwiring with the goal of eventually getting to this Tibetan saying, which I love very much, that says, seeking happiness by trying to rearrange external circumstances is like seeking sunlight in a north-facing cave. It's very unlikely that any of us is ever going to be able to rearrange circumstances to make ourselves always happy. So at a certain point, it's about working with our reactivity to the circumstances.
In Module 4, we're going to hear from Bill O'Hanlon, who will continue with this approach for working with blame. You'll want to be sure to catch his 4 practical strategies to help clients promote change in others. But right now, we're going to move the dialogue into a bit of a different area when working with blame. Up next in Module 3, we'll take a closer look at how to work with clients when the blame is toward them. I'll see you there.